today. Why at the peak of the coronavirus outbreak did Brent, a borough in London, have the highest death rate in the country? Fatima Abdi Jama is a Somali refugee living in Church End in Brent, a borough in northwest London.
Fatima Abdi Jama. How do you spell that?
Guardian reporter Amna Modin met Fatima while she was working on a story about how coronavirus has affected this tight-knit community.
Fatima owns a shop, kind of a cafe, which is also a grocery shop on Church Road. I went in and she was just, I felt like just such an incredibly warm and kind woman.
63, very young looking.
It's been a kind of a double impact. Her business has been quite severely impacted.
I closed 3 months. I'm not open, just I opened 2 days now.
She just basically had reopened a few days ago when I went to see her, and there was just hardly any customers there.
I lost a lot of money because I didn't do any business. It was closed.
But it wasn't just the financial hit. Fatima, like many of her neighbours, also fell severely ill.
What her experience of coronavirus was like really sounded horrific.
I called the ambulance when I don't breathe. When I was sick, I called many times ambulance, they didn't come for me.
I was really surprised that there wasn't an immediate response from the ambulance, because this is a woman who, you know, is a little bit older. She has diabetes, she has heart problems, she's got high blood pressure. We know these are all risks and puts you at a higher risk category to die from the coronavirus, but she still wasn't able to kind of be seen by medical staff.
It's good if it's government to help people when people is sick to call the ambulance.
Something she kind of said, you know, when people call the ambulance and they can't breathe, people should come. And I just thought, yeah, that is the basic minimum of what you need to do.
For Amna, who had just been covering the protests that erupted across London in response to the death of George Floyd in Minnesota, Fatima's story of not being able to breathe sounded all too familiar.
It's easy to kind of feel like what the reporting that I'm doing, like, oh, the Black Lives Matter protests are one thing that I'm doing, and then the coronavirus is, you know, another thing I'm doing. But what her story told me, that these two different stories and these two different phenomenons are very intimately connected for the Black community.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, the story of why COVID-19 killed 36 residents in one small London neighbourhood. Amna, tell me about Brent. What kind of a place is it?
So Brent is a really interesting borough in London. It's a borough that many young professionals are moving into. So we've got loads of new builds in Brent, massive Victorian brick housing. There's bits of it that are beautiful, leafy suburbs with, you know, income is very, very high. And then you walk to other areas in Brent where people are in much more deprived estates and they're struggling to pay rent, they're struggling to put food on the table, and they've got really insecure work. Brent was one of the first areas in the UK to become majority. So it has more non-white people than white people in the area. As I was walking down the high street, I saw a lot of Brazilian shops, but then I also saw, you know, lots of Somali shops and Afghani shops as well. So I just felt like, wow, felt like the whole world was at my doorstep.
You visited Church End, which is a tight-knit community in the borough. What is it like?
So Church End is just like, you know, a small neighbourhood, has a really, really large British Somali population. And it's one that's been there really since the late 80s.
And you spoke to a woman who is very prominent in that British Somali community. Who is she?
I was talking to Rhoda Ibrahim, and she's a community leader who's been in Brent since the late 80s.
I saw the poster. It says the Somali population increased by 100%.
Absolutely.
Her organisation, the Somali Advice and Forum of Information, has been really crucial to providing support for the Somali population. A date that's kind of stayed with Rhoda is the 10th of March.
On the 10th of March, on the Somali...
Which is the day that Brent was celebrating International Women's Day. You know, she started off her day at the Brent Civic Centre with the council event, which had about 100 people, and she met with the deputy mayor, and then in the evening she headed down to an event that her organisation helped set up. Many elders in the community came, and she was extremely pleased with the day. And then her friend Hassan Farrow, who's a local teacher, he's kind of really well known in the church and area because he's credited for helping four British Somali students from Brent get into Oxbridge, which I understand is a first for the community. So Hassan offered to drive her home.
He's the one who really gave me the lift that night. Even though he was tired, he was saying that he had a long day and then has asthma. But then
and she waved goodbye to him, and that would be the last time she saw him. He fell ill with coronavirus symptoms shortly afterwards.
But then that's it. The next time I heard, a few weeks later, that he was in a coma, because he was actually in the hospital for more than 6 weeks.
She was saying, you know, she, you know, prayed for him as much as possible. She was really holding out that he would get better. And then, you know, kind of 6 weeks after that, he unfortunately died.
And how was she when she was talking to you about that experience?
What kind of took me back was she seemed a bit numb to it, I think, because she really hasn't had even the time to process.
I mean, what happened to Hassan Farah is just devastating. But, I mean, he isn't the only person to have lost his life. Church End lost 36 residents to this virus. Who are some of the victims?
So we know that 36 number is actually much smaller than the number of people who have died in Church End, because that's just residents. It doesn't refer to many of the people who work in Church End or who come to socialise in Church End. You know, people from the Somali Church End community includes Abdul Qadir Muhammad Farah, who ran a business in Hammersmith, but he was kind of a sportsman.
Well known in the area. He's also a sportsman. And he still teach the young people, boys, especially for the football and other sports.
Sports, he was really known for supporting young people's basketball ambition. He died on 24th of March. Then we have Awais Ahmed Iman.
Sheikh Awais himself was really someone that's so well known.
He's the halwa shop.
The halwa shop, yeah.
When was the last time you saw Sheikh Awais?
It was that week on the 10th,
Did you buy halwa?
I want halwa.
He was known kind of locally as Sheikh Awais, and was known to sell like the best halwa. It's a very, very popular Somali sweet, a bit too sweet for me.
I was going to say, you can only have a little bit, can go a long way with halwa.
A little bit, yes. And, you know, he had a shop in Church End, and when he died, I think that was a really big blow to the community, and that was on 29th of March. And you've got Musumi Mursal Abdi. He's a tailor who migrated to the UK in the 90s, when it was one of the first tailors there in the community, a really pioneering figure in the community. And then he also died. I was actually in Rhoda's office, and she was showing me pictures of her friends on Facebook.
It's all in here. This is Khalif. This is Imbowe, but I will get his name. This is Hassan, the teacher, with another photo.
Yes, wow.
This lady is also from Church Road.
Or who have died, and I was generally really taken back, really stunned that she knew so many.
List you've just given me, Amna, is so long, and it clearly includes names of people who are incredibly important pillars of the community.
Mm-hmm.
How has their loss been felt?
It's been felt really deeply, and you know, something that Rhoda said to me that I couldn't stop thinking about was that there aren't that many Somali teachers.
He will be badly missed, because there are very few Somali teachers left now.
And it's so vital and important for young British Somalis to go to school and see people who look like them, who have their culture, who speak their language, who are in positions of power, who can support them, who understand a lot better the situation at home. I mean, so it is a huge loss. It was really moving to hear Rhoda speak about Hassan, you know, the the amount that he's done just to help her family, let alone the rest of the community.
A father figure for so many children like mine. I had three boys and I couldn't raise them alone without Hassan really. He was one of the things. He really used to encourage the children and the parents to work hard and steady and be someone in here.
And these are people who established businesses that people love to go to. You know, Rhoda said she loves the halwa shop. She loves going there and seeing, you know, Sheikh Awais and talking to him, and that kind of experience of church and has changed.
Why is it that this area of Brent has been so hard hit?
So three things, which is one, Brent has a huge, huge issue of in-work poverty. People are going out to work, but they're paid so low, it isn't giving them enough to buy basic necessities. There's a housing crisis in Brent, and it's one that's kind of been 40 years in the making. And finally, there are deeply entrenched racial injustices in Brent that people have been raising the alarm about, but not enough has been done to tackle it.
So let's talk about some of these factors. How has the housing crisis unfolded in Brent?
So if you really want to understand why you've got families of 10 living in three-bedroom flats, you really have to go back to the election of Margaret Thatcher's Conservative government in 1979. With the action of the Tories, they brought with it the idea that successful families and successful people want to buy their homes. That's why once the government introduced right to buy, a lot of people jumped at it. It gave them the ability to sell their flats and houses in London and to move out into the suburbs.
And this is something we've talked about before on previous podcasts, the impact of right to buy, which allowed people to purchase council houses, but meant that a lot of social housing stock was acquired by private landlords. What did this do to rental prices in Brent?
Previously, the homeowners of that property would be paying one thing to live in a council home. Once it was sold and it was bought by a private landlord, that rent is likely to be about 33% higher. And on top of the, we're seeing the dramatic drop in council housing stock. The Conservatives have limited the ability for councils to actually build council housing in the UK. So that kind of double effect meant that we saw the number of households in council housing reduce from 1 in 3 to about 1 in 6.
Wow, it's fascinating, isn't it, how that decision so many years ago has now impacted further down the line. I mean, how do you see this in Brent today?
The residents I spoke to complained about there being a lack of space where they live, and that lack of space would go on to become quite a significant risk factor for getting coronavirus. There was a study published in April that said that overcrowded living conditions were probably accelerating the spread of the virus.
And this is also an area with very high levels of poverty. Why is that?
What's become quite clear is that the amount people are spending on housing is impoverishing the people of Brent. So the rent in Brent, as well as the cost of buying a house, it matches what you see in central London, but people's pay don't. So there's just that mismatch is causing severe poverty in the borough. Something that stood out to me was, you know, poverty rates in the borough stand at 17% before housing is factored in. And that is quite similar to the rest of London. But when you factor in, you know, spending money on housing, that number shoots up to 33%. So that difference is showing you how many people are being impoverished just by housing costs.
And are the jobs that people are doing also a factor in this situation? I mean, are a lot of people in Brent frontline workers?
Yes, definitely. Many are cleaners, postal workers, shopkeepers, taxi drivers and bus drivers. They have to work, many of them. They didn't get given PPE. They were unwittingly picking up the virus and bringing it home to homes that people, there was no room for vulnerable people to shield. Others were also going into temporary accommodations where they were sharing toilets and kitchen facilities with other households. So there was a big problem.
And also, I suppose it's maybe worth mentioning that all this was happening, really, these people getting ill and dying were happening in the very early days, wasn't it, when the government really didn't have an approach to this?
Yes, so Rhoda's talking about an event on the evening of 10th of March. Boris Johnson announces the country is going into lockdown on the 23rd of March. And before then, you know, buses were full, people were walking up and down Church Road, Church End, they were socialising. The people who were on the front line, many would have picked up the virus and unwittingly brought it back to their homes.
This must have been, and will continue to be, a very frightening time for people in Brent, and so it must have been for the council as well. And you spoke to one councillor, Mohammed Butt, about this. How has he been personally affected?
Yes, so Mohammed Butt, the council leader, he wasn't very surprised when he was told that Brent had the highest COVID-19 death rate, because he really just could see it happening within his own community and within his own family.
Do you know, for me, it's a bit more personal, right, because my mother-in-law, right, she ended up in Northwick Park on a ventilator. Okay, right, she's now back home, right, but she's still so weak. Right. My cousin, she was 62. And she passed away, and then her cousin, who just lives just further down the road, right?
He told me that his mother-in-law ended up in the local hospital on a ventilator. You know, his 62-year-old cousin died, and her 64-year-old cousin also died. And you know, much closer to home, his grandmother died. And he said there were people, you know, on one street, several people had died.
I could see it happening quite quickly in front of my eyes, right? It's quite heartbreaking, right? That all this is happening.
And then it was kind of very clear for him to see that this was having a really devastating impact in his borough.
Yeah, and how is it impacted on his work? You know, what did he say about how the council have had to deal with this?
So one thing that the council's done, which I thought was very interesting, they've built a testing centre in Harlesden.
Out, and you have a swab, and with that swab, you have to swab your tonsils. And it talks about your tonsils.
Became quite clear that the cluster there is very, very worrying. I think it's one of the first local community testing centre that was put in England and Wales.
And does he see the impact this virus has had in Brent as a particular failure of central government?
I think so too. You know, I think he's honest about some of the way that the council maybe didn't respond quickly enough on things like translation, but largely they needed support from the central government. There's only so much that they could have done.
Take a look at the last 10 years. Right? We've had 170 million pounds taken out of the council's funding. Right? When you have that kind of funding taken out from any institution, right? The impact is going to be absolutely horrendous, right?
I think there was frustration about their not going into lockdown quickly enough. But something else was that it just felt like a one-size-fits-all approach, which was really frustrating for people who lived in Brent. Like, the issues that they have on the ground, again, like the housing issues, isn't the same issues in Wiltshire, you know?
After this, how the Church End community is healing and finding ways to rebuild out of this crisis. But first,
from The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, oh, what you want?
As many of you will know, working from home isn't easy. And for Anushka, recording script can be tricky with three kids in the house. But while making the podcast for the past few months has been a challenge for the whole Today in Focus team, it really does make it all worth it for us to know that thanks to you, we are in the top 20 podcasts in the Listener's Choice category at the British Podcast Awards. But if you still haven't voted for us, please consider doing so by going to britishpodcastawards.com/vote to show your support. The deadline is Monday, so I promise after that, I'm not going to ask you to do it again. Thank you. Amna, where do the Brent council leaders you've been speaking to see things going from here?
I think the big focus now is kind of, we can't go back to what we had before. A lot of people said that, a lot of councillors said that. I think this is an opportunity to create something different. There's really bad air pollution, and I imagine that's probably been a factor in the high COVID death rate. And the council want to now use the opportunity of the lockdown and the easing of lockdown to kind of provide the local residents with more opportunities to cycle? How can we get less cars on the road and more bikes and people walking? Because it's, they even said, you know, it's noticeably nicer to breathe the air here and we want that to remain. So I think there's lots of talks about like, what does a green industrial revolution look like in an area like Brent? How do we continue allowing it to be environmentally friendly? How do we tackle the racial injustices that we've seen? And so yeah, I think lots of talk of, you know, of renewal.
That's really interesting. So on a council level, there could be opportunities for change.
Mm.
Are there positive things already happening in the community?
Definitely. I spoke to one councillor, Joshua Murray, and he largely deals with two different people in Harston. He, on a normal day, would get emails from people who are really, really annoyed by like cracks on the pavement or fly tipping, and then also get emails to say, you know, another person has been stabbed, another person has been shot. And he describes it as these two very different worlds. He felt like the pandemic has, in a very weird way, been an opportunity to bridge that divide. You know, the wealthier community has been able to have a better understanding of what the poorer members of that society have been going through, and they've been getting involved in mutual aid. And lots of people talked about a return of the community spirit that existed in the 70s and 80s. And it's also healing divisions. I mean, there was a really big backlash when about 500 largely young black residents congregated for a block party in Church End. This happened around June. But I spoke to Ricky Gardner, who runs this youth training centre, and he said some people saw those clips that went viral on Twitter and felt anger and frustration that young people were going out and partying. But when he saw those clips, he saw people who come from different bits of Brent and wouldn't necessarily hang out and associate with each other, partying with each other. He said, you know, people had quashed personal squabbles, but also much more serious issues of gang violence. But he saw a real fragile unity in those clips. And he said that's an important step forward. Not only did he see unity, but in the way that young people were expressing their lived experiences, he said, was very, very interesting. You know, the way they talked about structural racism in schools, with their interactions with the police, and what's happening with the NHS, you know, the way their parents and grandparents are being treated, that he just said they felt a lot more socially aware. And what you're seeing is a very different reaction to anger, to racial injustices, than maybe you did a decade ago.
That was Amna Modin. Do read her full story about Brent at theguardian.com. And if you want to listen to a podcast full of intimate personal stories, I really recommend you try Innermost, a new podcast from The Guardian. It's presented by the brilliant Leah Green, and it gives you a window into conversations she's been having with people around the world about their secret lives. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to Amna Modin for speaking to me for today's episode. It was produced by Mithili Rao, and the sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.